Hello. My name is Anton Popov, and I'm Senior Research Fellow from Sociology Department. And my role here is to provide cultural and social perspective on the memory. Before I start, I would just reflect on what just Franca mentioned about the sleep and cultural sort of perspective on the sleep. Just remind me that in medieval Europe, people tend to sleep in sitting position, which actually quite interesting in relation to the sort of metaphoric use of sleep as a death. When we talk about memory in terms of culture and society, we used to concept social memory. So what we understand by social memory is intersubjective process of interpreting the past. So what is important here that we see memory not as a textual reality, not as a narrative as such, although it might be represented through the narrative, but as a process of production of meanings. So in a way, memory is as much about the past as about the present. In a way, we can see memory as a socialization in mnemonic communities. And what I mean by this is that what we as individuals remember, or as a society remember, and sociologists use concept of collective memory, is determined by historical and cultural context. So in a way, each society developed its own way of interpreting its own past. And this interpretation, they changed over the time, depending on the changing conditions of the society. Another important point about which I'm going to talk today is politics of memory. Anthropologists like Boyarin, for example, they think about the collective memory or social memory in general as a process of connecting the identity and politics and power relationships. So basically, social anthropologists and sociologists see social memory as drawing the boundaries of the society in reference to the past. And we have here the example of the struggle over classification, what we are as a society. Then another thing which I want to talk today is the so-called memory boom in society and popular culture. And in a way, you perhaps all can give the examples of this memory boom just turning on television and see the programs like the Who Do You Think You Are and so on. So it is obvious, or go to the museums and see some exhibitions there. So what is behind this actually is the attempt to give the voice of the ordinary people perspective on the past, the personal past or the past of their societies. Okay, and just to finish this, the first and rather boring and abstract slide, I would give some sort of possible ways of interpreting why memory, social memory or cultural memory, is so important today. Such historians, philosophers and sociologists like Elliot Osman, who is actually by her background is Egyptologist by work very much in memory studies at the moment. They think that actually contemporary interest in memory is the something which talks a lot about the stage of our social science, humanities, and society in general. And they talk about the turn from modernist frame, which was developed after the Second World War, and basically it was the idea that rather than remember the old traumatic histories and relationship and animosity, we have to forget this and move forward. So progress was in terms of the forgetfulness and forgetting the past. It's the turn from 1970s, 1980s to the memory, which coincided with the growth of the human rights agenda in the society in general, and the point was to give voice to the groups which were before suppressed. You can think here about the feminism, giving voice to women, children, to minority groups, and so on. Okay, just moving to the last point about the memory boom in popular culture, media, and art, and I put question mark here. One of the examples of this memory boom is, as I mentioned before, this the TV program, but also the series of the encyclopedias on how to do genealogy research. Who do you think you are? In a way, it is so popular. It represents the hobby of people of certain class and economic position, socio-economic position in the British society today. But in my opinion, it is representing, and in a way, it is giving voice to the ordinary people. If in the past the genealogy was mostly the domain of the elite societies, today it is something which anyone could do. You just have to buy this book and learn how to trace your genealogy. But in a way, it represents as much forgetfulness and forgetting as memory, because it's actually demonstrated the what modernization achieved in terms of it demonstrates uprootedness of contemporary society. You have to forget your roots in order to trace them back. Another example which I give here is, and I hope that the Herbert Museum people would see me as the ambassador of the of the institution here, is the exhibition I was there by George Shaw, who is the Turner Prize nominee. Unfortunately, he didn't get the prize, but nevertheless, this exhibition is now in the Herbert Museum. And this is another example how the interest is drawn to the memories of the community, of the particular community of Tile Hill, which just next door to this. And this is one of the most, perhaps, deprived and economically and socially marginalized communities in this city, which is also not quite the most affluent city in the country. To moving to the another topic, which is the politics of memory and I already mentioned that memory, in social memory, in a way, you can see as a domain of the production new identities, of constructing identities. But also you can think about how memory is used in the real politics by politicians, but as well as the activists and population. And here I present on this slide two examples. One is the so-called War of Monuments after Socialists, and this is the monument of the so-called Bronze Soldier in Tallinn, the capital of Estonia. And this monument is not, it doesn't exist in this particular form anymore. It was moved from the center of the city to its more marginal location on the cemetery. And first it was, during the Soviet times, it was represented, it was named as the memorial to the Soviet army which liberated Estonia. After independence of Estonia, it was renamed as the memorial to the fallen soldiers during the Second World War, which is a bit more inclusive. It includes also those soldiers who were fighting on the German side in Estonia, which of course was disputed by quite significant Russian minority in Estonia and by Russian state. And in 2007, this monument was completely relocated from its location, and it became the reason for some pogroms and riots in the Tallinn. So this is the one of the example how history actually reinterpreted, depending on the memories. Another example is from my research with the neo-Cossack movement, revivalist movement in southern Russia, and represents the marching Cossacks on the center of the one of the regional capitals. In a way, it's again, it's after the 1990s, the revivalist movement started, and the whole point was reimagine history, reimagine past of this group, So these people, they claim particular identity of them as a separate ethnic group from Russians, even though they are not recognized as such by Russian state. So to come again to more recent politics, perhaps you, some of you follow the news about the protests in, current protests in Russia, which some people see as a part of the trend, the global trend of protest. And if perhaps you know that the face of the 2011 was the face of the protester, the anonymous protester. So in Russia, this protest started a bit late in December 2011, and they were provoked by the fraudulent elections, parliamentary elections, in December the 4th. And here is the image of the one of the meetings or demonstrations in Russian capital Moscow in December on the Sakharov Prospect. But what is important, if we think about the political legacy and how it is interpreted in by the society, what is important is that it's interpreted from the particular perspective of the particular mnemonic community. So one who would observe the protest in Russia would notice that it's constant reference to the Russian Revolution of 1917. And protesters, as well as the state, as well as the government, they constantly would emphasize that we don't need another bloodshed, we don't need another revolution, we need stability. And below you can see again another quite interesting reference, the embodied reference to this event, the person, young person skating on the Moscow towards the demonstration dressed as a Red Army soldier with red flag. But government message about stability also evokes within the particular mnemonic community of the, which is Russian post-Soviet Union community, the image of the Brezhnev times, the Brezhnev era of stagnation. So therefore, in the very sort of visualized culture of Russian politics today, this image of Putin as Brezhnev. And then again, as a critique of the society, is this comparison of the Khrushchev and Medvedev. Both figures are seen in the particular mnemonic community as trickster figures. And they hold in their hands the corn and the iPhone, two symbols of the Soviet or post-Soviet modernization taken brought from the United States. Talking about the relationship between history and memory, we can speak about more dynamic rather than antagonism history, institutionalized history and memory, but more dynamic and more dialogical relationships. And here I would give you as an example the two ways how the Holocaust is remembered and represented in the West. And I'm talking here about Western Europe and United States and Israel and Eastern Europe. And on the slide, which is the photograph from the Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C., you can see the room with a lot of pictures, with a lot of images of the families which perished in the Second World War. What is important that this is sort of individualized stories. Each image is the story of the particular family, but they all represent the history or memory of the genocide of Jewish people in Europe. 6 million people perished. Then another image which you have here is the image of the memorial, which is called the Monument to Victims of the Nazi Terror. Nothing mentioned about the Jewish population in Krasnodar, one of the cities in southern Russia. Actually, this memorial is built on the place where 13,000, mostly Jewish people, but also some communists and some resistance activists, were buried after they were suffocated into the mobile gas chambers in this city. Nothing is said about Jewish identity of these people, or some majority of them, and is much more sort of grandeur and representation of this tragedy. In a way, in the Eastern Europe, Holocaust, the whole concept of the Holocaust as a genocide of Jewish population is a very recent theme and very recent way of remembering these tragic events, partly because it was stigmatized topic during the Stalinist period just after the Second World War, and many survivors of the concentration and death camps that were sent to Gulag. And then after this Nazi terror was remembered as a Nazi terror against Soviet people, so within the particular internationalist discourse on historical narrative. So then it comes to the individual narratives of this, or individual memories. These memories are produced not as a representation of the collective memory, but as individual of memories of survival rather than victimhood. So it's again how history influences. So, I try to talk very quickly. So one of the final things which I would like to talk today is the relationship between remembering and forgetting. And there is this tension between the silence and amnesia. Are they the same? If something is not told and not passed in terms of narrative to the younger generation, does it mean that society forgot about this? It doesn't exist. And perhaps we can think that silence is also, perhaps in some sort of negative or different way, is the way of passing memories. And you can think about the observing the minute of silence as a commemoration of the fallen soldiers, for example, as one of the practices. But also, if something is not told, it's not necessary that it's forgotten. Perhaps people, some memories are too traumatic to be told. So, in a way, forgetting is part of remembering. And I give you one example when I was talking about this interest in genealogies. So, perhaps this interest in genealogies is exactly because we forgot our roots and where we belong to. And just we can think about the Derrida's phrase that without forgetting, our memory would be just everlasting self-presentation. So we need forgetting in order to have memory. But also, sometimes we don't need really tell stories. We can pass memories through by other means. And here, there is very nice, the sort of the cover of very nice book by British sociologist Les Beck, The Art of Listening, and the quote from this book where he is talking about the tattooing within the British working class context. He makes the point that historically, working class people, they are not trained to express their feelings through words, through poetry, through narratives. So they use some other means to do this, and this is tattooing, when you put actually on your body the memories of the loved one. And this actually betrayed the memory of the whole class structure in the society, of the inequalities which exist in the society. And just to finish, you can think about the memory as a sensorial experience. That we actually, when we even, you do not necessarily have to be the first, to have first-hand experience of the past in order to have memory of the past. And this is the whole concept of the social memory as a process of socialization in mnemonic community. Here is the picture of the, again from my field work in southern Russia, the person dressed in Cossack uniform performing the swordsmanship skills in front of school children. And obviously it's reference to the particular past before the Russian Revolution in 1917, and it also represents particular identity as well, but it's also the experience for these children, their emotions. They saw this, they would remember this, and they would talk about this. And just to finish with again, reference back to the health and culture, this is the quote from one of my informants about genetic memory. So genes, of course, it's something which is we learn from science and from medicine, but it is keep be reinterpreted by ordinary people. In this case, it is reinterpreted in terms of the genetic memory. So by learning how to use sword, some would explain his or her progress in terms of the coming that genes are resurfacing. And just to finish,
It's some questions which I would like you to consider, but maybe we can come back to this later. Thank you very much.